Before we get into this one, clear label up front. The evidence in this episode is current. Some of the scenes and personal details are composite or speculative, built to pressure test what the labor market already seems to be doing. We are not pretending to report from somebody's real inbox. We are trying to make a pattern visible before it hardens into common sense, and the pattern already looks ugly. The live tracker at layoffs.fyi shows more than 73,000 tech employees laid off in 2026 alone. SignalFire's 2025 State of Talent report says new grad hiring is down 50% versus pre-pandemic levels, and in big tech, new grads are now only about 7% of hires. Anthropic's Economic Index says AI usage is concentrated in software development and technical writing, and leans more toward augmentation than automation, 57% augmentation, 43% automation. That sounds almost comforting until you realize where augmentation lands first. It lands on the first draft, the first pass, the low-risk analysis, the support queue, the junior coding task, the summary, the rewrite, the rough outline, the thing an inexperienced person used to do while becoming experienced. So today's question is not, did AI kill all jobs? That is too blunt and honestly too stupid for the moment we're in. The sharper question is this: what if the first thing AI kills is entry level in the practical sense? Not the label, the live thing, the rung, the awkward but real zone where people used to get in, learn slowly, make mistakes, and become worth more later. With me is Mara Reyes, a fictional composite early career worker, built from current signals, job market realities, and the emotional logic of this moment. Mara, I want to start with the sentence that I think now haunts an entire generation. There are still entry-level job listings everywhere, but fewer and fewer of them feel like entry-level work. When you hear that, what does it mean from the worker side?
It means the role exists as branding, but not as mercy. That is the shortest, honest answer I can give. The phrase entry-level still shows up in job titles because companies know they need a word for the bottom of the ladder, but the lived experience of applying to those jobs feels very different now. You open the listing and it says 1 to 3 years preferred, experience with modern AI tools, high ownership, ability to work independently, exceptional communication, portfolio required, evidence of cross-functional execution, comfort with ambiguity, and some version of, we move very fast here. Then you think, okay, so this is not a first job. This is a fully formed worker with a discounted title. And because the market is tight, everybody starts gaslighting themselves. Maybe I really am behind. Maybe everyone else has somehow become an AI-native mini-executive at 22. Maybe I should do another course, another side project, another unpaid internship, another portfolio sprint, another personal brand push, another round of prompt engineering tricks, another set of mock interviews. The worker starts internalizing what is actually a structural change as if it were a private moral failure. That's the cruelty of this period. The market is hardening, but the messaging stays individualized. You are told to optimize harder, network better, learn faster, use the tools, differentiate yourself. That advice is not totally wrong, but it hides the bigger truth, which is that the first rung is narrower than it was, and the people applying can feel it even when nobody with institutional power wants to say it out loud. From the worker side, that creates a specific kind of humiliation. You are asked to show polish before anyone has paid to develop you. You are expected to already think like somebody who has seen the inside of the machine, while more and more institutions are refusing to let you into the machine in the first place.
The phrase that sticks there is not a first job, a fully formed worker with a discounted title. Because once you say it that way, the whole labor market starts looking like a trick of naming. I keep coming back to an old reality that people used to understand intuitively. A lot of white-collar work was never only about immediate efficiency. It was also about social manufacturing. Companies were, among other things, factories for turning unfinished people into competent adults with context, taste, judgment, and scar tissue. Not because those companies were saints, usually because they needed a pipeline. Juniors were inconvenient, yes, but they were also the raw material of future teams. So institutions tolerated the boring parts of human development. They tolerated bad early drafts, over-explained meetings, clumsy analysis, slow onboarding, and supervision that did not look efficient on a spreadsheet. What AI changes is not just task speed, it changes patience. If a model can produce the first draft, summarize the meeting, generate the comparison table, propose the outline, draft the cold outreach, scaffold the code, and synthesize the notes, then every manager starts asking a very dangerous question. Why exactly am I paying a human to be unfinished in this area? Not every manager says that with cruelty. Some say it with spreadsheets, some say it with optimism, some say it with the calm voice of process improvement. But the effect can be the same. The org becomes less willing to host people who need time, and I think that is why this moment feels different from the old automation arguments. The damage is not just that a machine does more. The damage is that institutions stop feeling responsible for the slow conversion of potential into capability. Mara, I want to stay with the emotional reality for a second. When a generation starts hearing that companies want initiative, tool fluency, independence, polish, and immediate leverage from so-called entry-level workers, what does that do to the psychology of being young at the beginning of a career?
It makes youth feel like a defect instead of a stage. That sounds dramatic, but I think it is accurate. There used to be a broad social understanding that being early meant being uneven. You might be smart and energetic and ambitious, but of course you were also slow in certain ways. Of course you needed correction. Of course your first month would not look like your 12th. That was normal. The employer was not doing charity by allowing that. They were participating in the reproduction of a profession. Now, imagine being 22 or 24 in a market where all the language around you implies the opposite. Every listing says impact. Every recruiter says ownership. Every interview loop quietly tests whether you can already function like someone two or three layers above the title. And behind all of that is the unspoken comparison. The software is instant, the model is tireless, the workflow can already generate the first pass. So why exactly should the company tolerate your slowness? People start feeling ashamed of ordinary development. That is the key psychological shift. Instead of thinking, I am early, therefore I am learning, they think, I am early, therefore I am suspicious. I need to hide uncertainty. I need to present as already formed. I need to overperform maturity. I need to speak in the accent of experience before I have been allowed to earn it. That changes behavior. Candidates spend more time simulating confidence and less time building confidence. They become hyper-aware of sounding basic. They avoid questions that might reveal inexperience. They attach identity to being AI native because it sounds like a substitute for depth. They get trapped in a strange loop where every piece of advice says, use AI to move faster, but every improvement in speed raises the expected baseline even higher. So, yes, AI can help a junior worker perform. Absolutely. But it can also create a world where the market says, since you have the tool, you no longer have the right to look junior. And that is a brutal burden to place on people at the beginning of adulthood.
Since you have the tool, you no longer have the right to look junior. That is one of the most clarifying lines I have heard about this whole transition, because that is the trap, right? There is a real pro-worker argument for these tools. If you are new, AI can absolutely help you draft faster, research faster, structure faster, test faster, and close some of the gap between you and someone with more experience. That is not fake. It is real leverage. It can make a junior analyst better. It can make a new engineer less blocked. It can make a first-time coordinator less intimidated by the blank page. On the individual level, the tool can feel liberating, but the market does not stop at the individual level. Once enough firms believe junior workers can be AI amplified, they do not just say, great, let's help more juniors. They say, maybe we need fewer of them. Or maybe the same number of tasks can be handled with a smaller intake. Or maybe we can hire one unusually polished beginner instead of three normal ones. Or maybe the old training program is too expensive because the baseline capabilities of the surviving workers should now be higher. That is what I think a lot of boosterish AI rhetoric keeps skipping. A productivity tool in a labor market is never just a personal accelerator. It becomes part of a bargaining system. It changes what managers expect. It changes what recruiters screen for. It changes what counts as enough. And once enough changes, access changes. I want to make this vivid. Give me the scene, not a fake claimed memoir, a composite pressure test. What does a normal week feel like for a smart, decent, early career worker caught in this moment? Somebody applying, freelancing, upskilling, maybe half employed, maybe over-credentialed, maybe trying very hard not to panic.
It feels like living inside permanent pre-qualification. Monday, you apply to roles that call themselves entry-level but read like compressed mid-level jobs. By Tuesday, you are rewriting your resume again so it sounds more fluent in AI, more strategic, more business-facing, more like somebody who already understands internal systems. Wednesday, you are doing unpaid or low-paid project work because at least it gives you something to point to. Thursday, you are watching videos about how to use AI tools better. Not because you think the tool alone will save you, but because you know the absence of tool fluency now reads as negligence. Friday, you are on LinkedIn watching peers announce roles, certifications, fellowships, launches, and side projects, and the feed makes the market look vibrant even while your own inbox feels dead. Then there is the ghosting. That matters more than people admit. Silence is part of the emotional architecture of this economy. If a company rejects you cleanly, at least the event ends. Silence turns the market into a hall of mirrors. Was the problem your resume? Your school? Your city? Your portfolio? Your prompts? Your lack of internships? Your overuse of AI? Your underuse of AI? Your tone? Your timing? Your salary expectation? Your face on video? Your uncertainty? Your trying too hard? Your not trying hard enough? And because the market's official message is still opportunity, you feel weirdly guilty for how bad it feels. People keep saying this is an amazing time to build, to learn, to leverage tools, to become anti-fragile. Fine. Maybe. But from the worker side, it can feel like the floor never arrives. Everything is conditional. Everything is audition. Everything says maybe you can enter if you already know how to behave like somebody who has been inside for years. That is why I said permanent pre-qualification. You are not just doing work. You are endlessly proving you might deserve the right to start doing work.
Endlessly proving you might deserve the right to start doing work. That is such a clean description of the insult. And the insult is not just emotional, it is structural. Because when enough people get trapped in that loop, the whole labor market starts reallocating risk downward. Companies keep flexibility. Workers absorb uncertainty. Institutions keep saying they value talent. Individuals keep paying the cost of becoming talent under worsening odds. Here is where the signal fire number becomes explosive to me. New grad hiring down 50% versus pre-pandemic. Big tech new grads only 7% of hires. That does not just mean fewer offers. It means a shift in what the industry believes it owes the future. If the firms with the most resources are taking fewer bets on unfinished people, the rest of the ecosystem learns from that. Startups say they need immediate leverage. Bigger firms say they need strategic hires. Everyone starts wanting somebody else to absorb the training cost. And that is how you get a market that still talks like a meritocracy while behaving more and more like a sorting machine. The privileged worker can survive a longer runway, do another fellowship, relocate, build a nicer portfolio, accept a weaker first role, or lean on networks. The worker without that cushion feels the narrowing first and hardest, so the death of entry level, if that phrase becomes real, is not only an efficiency story, it is a mobility story, a class story, a who gets finished story. Mara, take me one level deeper on that. What happens to equality of access when companies stop asking who could become great here and start asking, who already looks machine amplified enough to justify one of our very few slots?
The labor market gets more aristocratic while still using democratic language. That is the cleanest way I know how to put it. When the first rung narrows, the people most likely to survive are the ones who can afford to arrive polished. That polish can come from elite schooling, family support, unpaid internships, dense networks, geographic proximity, better tools, better guidance, or simply enough financial slack to endure months of uncertainty without collapsing. The market will call that talent. Some of it is talent. Some of it is also insulation. And once companies compress intake, the distinction matters more. The old system was never fair, but it had a little more room for conversion. Somebody rough but gifted could still get in and become legible over time. Somebody from the wrong background could still use a first decent role as a bridge into the professional class. If the market becomes less willing to host unfinished people, that bridge weakens. The winners are the people who arrive already fluent in the rituals of competence. This is where AI gets misdescribed as neutral. The tool itself may be broadly available. Fine. But broad availability is not the same as equal conversion. Two people can have access to the same model and still get radically different outcomes because one has better prompts, better coaching, better context, better prior training, more confidence, and more runway to experiment badly. The market tends to confuse access to software with a quality of opportunity. They are not remotely the same thing. So when firms say they are just raising the bar, I always want to ask, raised for whom exactly? Raised in what environment? Raised on top of what prior support? Sometimes what looks like higher standards is really a refusal to do the social work of development. And if many firms make that choice at once, society loses one of the few mechanisms it had for turning raw potential into stable adulthood.
Let's hit the strongest counterargument now, because if we do not, this episode turns into lazy despair. The counterargument goes something like this. Every generation thinks technology has ended the beginner path, and then the economy adapts. New tools change the shape of work. New categories appear, some tasks disappear, but others open up. AI may actually be especially good for beginners because it lowers the cost of doing sophisticated work. A junior with strong tools might outperform an older worker who never adapted, and if that is true, then maybe all this ladder collapse language is just emotional overreach. Maybe we are confusing transition pain with permanent closure. I think that argument deserves respect. Because a lot of people are, in fact, building new ways in through AI-native work. There are individuals using these tools to freelance, prototype, write, market, code, and teach themselves skills that would have taken much longer before. There are real cases where AI expands access, but I still think something serious is happening. The Anthropic Economic Index line matters here. Usage concentrated in software development and technical writing, with more than a third of occupations seeing AI use in at least a quarter of their associated tasks. That is not just some sidecar phenomenon. That is the coordination layer of knowledge work getting reshaped in public. And when that layer changes, the institutions that used to host beginners start redesigning their tolerance for beginners. So maybe the most disciplined claim is not entry level is dead everywhere. Maybe the disciplined claim is the conditions under which entry-level used to function are being degraded faster than the replacement pathways are being built. Mara, do you buy that version? That we are not watching simple extinction, but something maybe even more destabilizing? The old path eroding before the new one is mature enough to catch people?
Yes, I think that is exactly the danger. Because transitions are survivable when institutions deliberately bridge them. They become cruel when everyone assumes someone else will build the bridge. Right now, schools tell students to become more adaptable, more interdisciplinary, more AI fluent. Fair enough. Employers say candidates should arrive more ready, more autonomous, more technically literate, more proactive. Fine. Workers tell each other to build in public, create portfolios, learn tools, stay resilient, keep iterating. Also, fine. But those are all adaptation instructions at the level of the individual. They do not answer the institutional question, who is actually paying to absorb the awkward middle of this transition? If firms reduce junior hiring because AI plus a smaller team looks cheaper, if schools keep selling degrees into a labor market with fewer first rungs, and if public policy treats the whole thing as a vague productivity story, then the burden of adaptation keeps moving on to people with the least leverage. That is how a transition becomes a sorting event, and the emotional danger there is subtle. People do not experience the collapse of entry level as a macro concept. They experience it as private failure. I was not chosen. I was not polished enough. I should have learned faster. I should have had better internships. I should have understood the tools sooner. I should have branded myself better. The person blames themselves for what is partly an institutional retreat. So yes, I buy your framing. The old path is eroding before the replacement path is credible at scale. And when that happens, the labor market becomes harder, not only because there are fewer jobs, but because the route from not yet useful to useful becomes more expensive, more lonely, and less collectively supported.
Let's push into the near future, and again, clear label. This next scene is speculative, not current reporting. A pressure test. Imagine late 2027 or 2028. The economy is not in total collapse. The headlines are mixed. Some firms are expanding, some are cutting. AI copilots are just normal now. Most white-collar workers touch some form of model-assisted workflow every week. Companies keep saying they are investing in talent, but the hiring dashboards tell a quieter story. There are still jobs called coordinator, analyst, associate, junior PM, junior engineer, content strategist, researcher, customer success specialist. The labels survived. That is important. People can still point at the titles and say, look, the first rung still exists. But under the hood, the meaning of those jobs changed. Every manager assumes tool fluency. Every team assumes accelerated throughput. Every opening attracts a flood of applicants who already know the market is hostile. Nobody wants to be the candidate who looks slow, uncertain, or too raw. So the interviews shift. The candidate is not being tested only for capability. They are being tested for machine-adjusted capability. Can you already produce at a level that justifies the seat in a compressed team? Can you absorb context without needing much supervision? Can you move from prompt to draft to refinement without burning manager attention? Can you show evidence that you are more than a beginner while still accepting the salary and status of one? That is the part that keeps getting me. The system does not abolish the category. It hollows it out. It keeps the junior title but expects mature output. It keeps the promise of entry while pricing in the demands of experience. Mara, in a world like that, what happens to the idea of a career? Not a job, a career. The story people used to tell themselves about how adulthood and work were supposed to fit together.
The story becomes thinner, shorter term, and harder to trust. A career used to imply sequence. You begin somewhere imperfectly. You accumulate reps. You become more legible. You get better assignments, better judgment, better pay, and eventually a clearer sense of who you are inside an institution. That story was never universal and never guaranteed, but it was believable enough that millions of people organized their lives around it. If the first rung hardens, sequence itself starts breaking. People still work, yes. They still hustle, freelance, contract, rotate, patch together income, build side projects, do fellowships, do short stints, maybe win a few great opportunities. But the feeling of a stable developmental arc gets weaker. Instead of a ladder, life starts feeling like a series of qualifying rounds with unclear rules. You are always trying to prove you are ready for the next room, but fewer rooms are willing to host the part where you become ready. That has downstream effects on family formation, risk tolerance, debt, identity, and mental health. If you do not trust the path into adulthood, you hesitate differently. You move cities differently. You borrow differently. You choose relationships differently. You imagine your future differently. People talk about AI and jobs as if the question is mostly payroll. It is not. It is also whether institutions still provide recognizable transitions into stable personhood, and if they stop doing that, the political consequences will be larger than many executives expect. People can tolerate hard work. They can even tolerate insecurity for a while. What they hate, and rightly hate, is being told the game is open while the gate keeps narrowing in front of them.
That is the line I want people to sit with, being told the game is open while the gate keeps narrowing. Because that, to me, is the real worker side scandal of this phase. The rhetoric stays optimistic. Learn the tools, adapt, build, experiment, stay anti-fragile, great, fine. But beneath that optimism, an institutional withdrawal may already be underway. Firms still want talent. They still say they care about potential. They still claim to be investing in the future. But more and more of them seem less willing to finance the human process by which potential becomes dependable capability. And if that is right, then we should stop using unserious language about whether AI will replace all jobs. That is not the only story worth fearing. The harder, colder story is that AI plus current incentives may create a labor market where access hardens, apprenticeship thins, and youth itself becomes economically suspicious. That is a different kind of social wound. It does not announce itself with one dramatic layoff. It shows up as fewer doors, narrower doors, more ghosting, harsher standards, more self-blame, and an entire generation trying to prove it deserves to begin. So what do we watch now? I would watch three things. First, junior hiring ratios, not slogans, actual intake. Second, the language inside job listings. How much mature execution is getting stuffed into entry-level titles? Third, whether institutions rebuild apprenticeship in any credible form, or whether they keep assuming AI can substitute for the social work of development. Mara, before we close, give me your answer to the title. The year the entry-level job died. Too dramatic, or exactly dramatic enough to force the right conversation?
I think it is dramatic enough if people hear it as a warning, not a settled obituary. Entry-level work is not literally gone everywhere. People are still getting hired. Some firms still train. Some managers still mentor. Some workers are using AI to create surprising new paths for themselves. All of that is true. So if someone hears the title and thinks we are claiming a universal present tense extinction event, no, that is not the argument. The argument is sharper than that. The conditions that made entry-level work socially meaningful are under pressure. The role title can survive while the rung dies. The listing can survive while the patience dies. The promise can survive while the institutional willingness to finish unfinished people dies. And if that keeps spreading, then from the worker side, it will absolutely feel like entry-level died, even if the economy keeps printing junior-sounding job names. That is why I think the title earns its force. It is trying to make visible a death in function before it becomes a death in language. And honestly, I hope the title ends up being wrong. I hope companies decide that apprenticeship is worth protecting. I hope schools and employers build better AI-era bridges. I hope managers resist the temptation to treat every beginner as a defective machine. I hope we do not build a society that only welcomes people after someone else has already paid to make them legible. But hope is not a strategy. So the real use of a title like this is diagnostic. It asks, are we still building a first rung? Or are we just pretending the old one is there because we kept the sign on the wall? If you are hiring, teaching, training, or trying to enter the market yourself, that is the question now, not whether AI is here. It is. The question is whether we are going to use it to widen capability, or whether we are going to use it as an excuse to abandon the beginning of the human career. That is the year I'm afraid of. The year the label survived, but the latter didn't.